We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second? Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
I'm sure one of the questions people are asking as we're talking so far is, okay, wow, she was able to do a renovation through this particular program for her first property. Wow, what did she do as far as the renovation? But now you mentioned that there is somebody in between to support with whoever's doing the work. So what was that experience like for you getting that renovation done? What are some lessons you learned, challenges? I would just love to hear about that experience.
Man, it was so many lessons. It's like your first fall off a bike your first time. You learn a lot, but I didn't fall off my bike. So, you know, obviously the lender, and I want to add too, like there was a guy named John Settles. He was a part of my finance team and he wasn't directly working with me, but he was another a black man who saw another black person, really wanted to help, and he was guiding me through the whole process. He showed me a good, you know, electrician, a good plumber, a lot of masonry folks. So anyway, they were like, you'll need to get 3 quotes. So I went on Angie's List, like just like crazy stuff like that. Went on Angie's List, found 3 people, got a really high quote from a developer over in Capitol Hill. I was like, nah. Then I got a middle quote. I don't think they could do everything I wanted. And of course, being my first time, I went with the lowest quote. Was not a good decision in going with the lowest. That was probably my first mistake. But when you get these bids from the contractors, they have to give those bids to the bank. And the bank's got to sign off and say, okay, your flooring will cost $10,000, your roofing will cost $15,000, plumbing another $20,000. So the bank is like eyeing it and they're checking each contractor's either ratings in the, you know, Business Better Bureau or just their returns. So the bank is really like, they care about you as a buyer, but they're like, we don't want to mess up our equity partners. So we're going to make sure this guy is good. And he was. He just happened to be the lowest bid. And I think when you get multiple bids, it should be like a number that they all kind of, you know, come in around. And you want to keep an eye on that. And this guy was just a lot lower. But again, I'm like, I don't want to go too high because then I'm going to be outside of my budget. So I went with him. It worked out for a little bit and then I had to fire him. So I learned a lot about draw schedules. I don't know if you know, you're aware of, you know, like it was 5 draws. He kept asking for money too soon before the work was done. And the bank kept telling him no. And then he would stop working and it was so bad that I think he failed an inspection and he wouldn't go back and do the work because he hadn't gotten paid, but the bank wasn't going to pay him. So we had like, I don't know, like $40,000 left in the work. It was like, we were like almost done. He was like, I can't move forward because I need to get paid. But the bank is like, you're supposed to do X, Y, and Z. So had to fire him and they allowed me to use that extra money to hire someone else, which I did. So it can be complicated for sure. But you don't know these things until you know, you know. That was a long answer, my bad.
No, that's I mean, that's what we're here for.
Okay.
I want people to hear the full explanation and really understand what your experience has been. And for those who may not be familiar with just like working with contractors and things of that nature, can you explain what a draw schedule is?
Sure. So if you have a renovation loan, let's say it's $50,000 and you want to do some work, the bank doesn't give you $50,000 up front. They give you $50,000 over progress payments. They used to give like 30% up front for materials. I'm not sure if they do that anymore, but they'll say, all right, you finished your permitting, you finished demolition, you got your framing up, we'll give you, you know, 20% of the 50K, whatever your budget schedule is. So you get those payments in draws. It's just not one lump sum up front, because, you know, as time goes on, you'll figure out that a lot of contractors aren't good with managing money. And a lot of times they have a lot of projects going on. So that is why the bank gives the reimbursements in schedules and in draw reimbursements.
Got it. And so the cost of the renovation, is it rolled into the loan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So typically, let's say if you buy a $100,000 house and your renovation is 50K, they will roll that into an entire loan of 150K total. And you might have to pay about, 3% or 3.5%, whatever your down payment is, you'll pay 3.5% of that purchase and rehab cost. And then what happens is, also keep in mind that your renovation loan, your 203K loan, your Homestar renovation loan, these are at higher interest rates because they're more riskier to the bank. However, once you're done with your renovation, the bank then allows you to refinance into a market rate interest rate. So you can have a lower interest rate, and then you refinance into a 30-year or a 15-ARM, whatever your long-term financing is going to be.
So it sounds like these are two great options, the home style and the 203K, for folks who, you know, want to force some appreciation, build up some equity at the outset. And it's great because you still get experience like with the renovations, and even, you know, if things don't always go as planned, it's almost like you have a safety net, so to speak, because the bank is looking out for their interests. And, you know, I think you said there's a consultant on the 203K side. Is there something similar in home style too?
Mm-hmm.
So consultant. You have that person in between. To me, it seems like a great introduction to real estate where there's some guardrails in place, and a lot of people are afraid of, you know, doing renovations and things of that nature. However, it could be very beneficial, and these could be some good options. And also, obviously, the lower down payment, if you need that as well, I think is also good.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's important. I think if, like you said, the bank, I see this from such a business mindset. The bank is not going to loan you money if they don't see value in whatever you're doing. They're just not. They have FHA, Fannie, Freddie. They're backed by the government. So they really have tight guidelines that they have to follow. So they're not going to mess up. I think when it becomes risky is the renovation portion with contractors. And to kind of contradict this fear or this uncertainty, what I always tell buyers now who are going through this is find someone who has worked with these contractors before. Now, you know, we could say, all right, well, why don't you do that? And I was like, well, I did. So what I did was I found these three companies and asked for their referrals. I could give you three of my greatest referrals, but I'm not going to give you the worst ones, right? So there is ways to really do your due diligence. But what I would do now is I ask for contractors from people that I know, like you and that I can text. Mm-hmm. So like the guy I had mentioned, John Settles, who was a part of the lending team on my first house, he has been an imperative part of my journey because he gave me people, like he is someone that like I knew his wife, his kids. He's giving me my electrician, he's giving me my plumber, giving me my HVAC technician, my masonry guy. I've all of my trades I got from him. And even though I didn't use him on that first house because I had to use one GC, on my next six, five, whatever houses, I used all those people, but they came directly from him. So I think the lesson I learned in that was find someone that you know at arm's length versus just asking for referrals, you know, straight from the contractor. You should still do that. But sometimes I think when you have a close relationship with someone, they're not going to let you fail. And if they had a personal bad experience, they're not going to let you go through the same thing. I just think there's just levels to referrals, just like in any business. But yeah.
For those who may not know, what is a GC and what is masonry?
Sorry. GC is your general contractor. So this is essentially the manager or the general overseer of all of the tradesmen. What are tradesmen? Your tradesmen or women are people like your electricians who install new electricity throughout a home, your plumber who installs new plumbing, your HVAC who will take care of your heating and central air or whatever type of system you have. Your masonry is my guys, essentially someone who does our framing, our brickwork, our drywall, plaster. You could have a painter. So these are all just different tradesmen. Your masonry guy, I call him masonry because he does everything. like framing and brickwork, but they're not all called that, but yes.
Yeah. Right. So you bought that first property. You went through all these experiences. That was a multifamily, I'm assuming. Was that a single family?
The first one?
Yeah.
Single family.
Got you. Okay.
Over here on H Street.
Dope. So we right in the neighborhood. You told me that earlier. Yeah, yeah. So
I love H Street.
Yeah, absolutely. It's dope. Just like walking around and seeing what's over here. It's a cool area.
It is. People hate on it, but I love it.
Hate on it? Why?
I'm not
from here, so I don't know.
Because it's so many restaurants, which is a good thing, right? Uh-huh. I love it here because I can wake up, crust in my eye, and I can walk 30 seconds and get coffee. It's like 5 minutes and be just everything is at your fingertips. Mm-hmm. Trolley, veterinarian for the dog. Like it's everything is. And I appreciate that. To me, that says you don't need a car. And that's a less of an expense you need. So I find value in that. But you know, like any city, there's a lot of traffic and so things happen. But I love H Street.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.